My name is Jeremy, I'm an addict and alcoholic. By the grace of God and working the 12-step program and through the fellowship of CA, I am clean and sober today. You know, a person that not that long ago came, like Scott said, I was broken. I had a hopeless state of mind and body, and there was no hope for me anywhere. I was fortunate in that I learned the solution. And I have to tell you, the solution was not my creation. The solution was given to me by recovering drug addicts and alcoholics. And as such, because of my sobriety, I have had a wonderful life. Carmen and I were talking earlier. Stuff happens today that you could never dream of when you're using. And again, God has blessed me with a long life, with good health. Unfortunately, with a long life, loss of hearing. The memory's not so good, you know. But I complain about my memory, and this friend of mine says, well, you know, the brain is really like a computer. And you have so much capacity, and that's it. You run out of capacity, and you can't take in anymore. So I don't have a bad memory. I just know too much. That's why he's a very close friend of mine. I grew up in a very small city in central Wisconsin. A family of seven in a small house, not a log cabin, which you guys are thinking. And, you know, it was, we had a very loving family. My older sister, God rest her soul, older brother, and my younger sister and I are absolutely, you know, we're the best of friends. My next oldest brother and I think we're a little too close in the age category where we fought all the time. But I had a fabulous mother. She's just very loving, very nurturing, great cook. I don't know when the woman ever slept, to be honest with you. My dad, different story. He was a functional alcoholic. And I always, you know, the way I thought, I never had what I needed or wanted. And I always blamed my dad. You know, so I had a lot of resentments, even hatred for him. Because I knew that a lot of money was going over the bar, and so I grew up with that. And, you know, but I was very blessed. I was an excellent student, I was a very good athlete, had a lot of friends. But me, you know, I had no gratitude. I always wanted something more. Excuse me. And that was something that would plague me until I went into recovery, frankly. Just the lack of gratitude. If you had it, I wanted it, and once I got it, I don't want it anymore. Things went great, school and so forth and so on, and I won't bore you with the details, but I was 15 years old, and after sporting events, a bunch of guys from the team and a bunch of girls would go out and have a beer party out in the woods. And I was quite a bit younger than everybody else because I had taken two grades in 1 year in grade school. But they invited me along, and I thought, this is pretty cool. So I went to the beer party, and after a couple of beers, I felt I arrived. You know, this is great stuff. You know, all of a sudden, you know, a little bit smarter, you know, a little bit funnier, people like me. I was one of the gang. So, you know, my first experience was fabulous. And, you know, it's a feeling that I chased for another 27 years, to be honest. And these things went on in high school, and they got a little more frequent. never really any trouble. My grades were all still very good, although the end of my junior year in high school, we were at a dance hall. And in those days, if you were 18, you could drink beer. And we went to, you know, at the bar. The bartender's kind of, you know, if you're an athlete, they would serve you. And I was 16 at the time. No, I wasn't even 16. Yeah, maybe I just turned 16. And we had her, you know, feeling her oats pretty good. And on the way home, we just thought it'd be great fun to tear down some road signs. And so we did it. And obviously, naturally, I should say, we got caught. And I had to go see the judge, the county judge, which is in a city next to us, and I appear before him. And, you know, I'm facing, you know, fines and restitution. And honestly, lack of my, losing my eligibility for my senior year in high school. And even worse, you know, I mean, if I lose out on this deal, I probably no longer will be eligible for an academic scholarship, and without it, I could not have afforded to go to college. So I go in front of the judge, and he's got all my records in front of him, and he said, yeah, good athlete, good student, and he, you know, if you promise not to drink again, I'm gonna just drop all the charges. And oh, this is great. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll never drink again, I swear. And so, you know, for me, it was like no consequences, no problem. And this went on. And you know, went to college. I was fortunate, you know, I started in the football team. So I was kind of like a cool guy again, you know? A lot of parties. A lot of people buying you beer, and my drinking just went on and on and on. And I say it never affected my studies or never affected my sports, but, you know, I truthfully, my grades weren't what they should have been. I probably could have been a little bit better in football had I trained better, but I didn't. Well, my junior year in college, the owners of the sporting goods store in town said, you know what, we're going to help you out, kid. How'd you like to work for us part-time after the football season? Oh, this is great. So I did it. And, you know, it went on about a year. And, you know, it got to the point where my drinking expenses were exceeding my income. So, you know, my job at the sporting goods store was to sell merchandise and take the money and put it in the till. Well, you got the one for you, one for me, you know, one of those. Then at some point the owner said to me, you know, Jim, our till isn't adding up at night. Are you taking any money out of the till? Me? You gotta be kidding. No. So they kind of dropped everything. So here again, you know, no consequences, no problem. Well, you know, my drinking just continued on. Graduated from college, had good jobs. And, you know, I moved to Milwaukee out of college and stayed in a house with four other guys. And we had, in the kitchen, we had cases of beer stacked, you know, probably 5 feet high and 10 feet wide. One of the guys worked at the brewery, that was the reason, but, so, you know, almost every day we drank. And, you know, I hated my dad. He was a functional alcoholic. You know, I didn't think so then, but here I was, I became my dad. I was a functional alcoholic. I drank for sure every weekend, you know, and then during the week we'd play cards and drink. And, well, anyway, this stuff just went on throughout my life. And in those days, in order to get advancements, it was best to take transfers to other cities. That was perfect for me because by the time, you know, I wore out the friends I had, you know, my drinking started being a problem. I moved to South Bend, Indiana. Then I moved to Chicago. Then I moved to Hartford, Connecticut, Minneapolis. And it was just kind of like staying ahead of everything. And better yet for me, I was in a lot of relationships. None of them ever lasted. And the reason they didn't last is because, you know, I always wanted something better, you know? I was, you know, be totally attracted to this woman, be with her for a few months, and I want something else. And so here again, my lack of gratitude. And, you know, this went on for a long time. Then I moved back to Milwaukee and had this great job. And this lady from our corporate office in Chicago came to visit my office that I was running on a project, and she was very attractive. So she and I kind of hit it off, and then finally she was going to come up and see me one weekend. And so she did, and we were out, and she said to me, "Have you ever done cocaine?" I didn't want to be a complete nerd, so I said, "No, but I always wanted to, you know?" So, off to the races. And I found my true love, and it wasn't her. And you know, we do that reading, Who's an Addict? Every time I hear it, I swear to God that was modeled after me. Because that's what I did. Friday night, maybe, Saturday night, okay. So this went on for a period of time. Well, the weekend really starts on Thursday. And then on Monday, I had to take a few hits just to shape up and go to work. Then it was every day. And you know the story. You know, the use of just went from the weekends only to every day. I had got to the point where I was snorting cocaine in my office at work. And I didn't give a shit. I didn't care if anybody saw me or not. And finally, I was engaged to this girl. And we were going out to dinner. We had some friends coming in town, another couple. And she made a comment to me. She said, "You know, don't get drunk and make an ass out of yourself again tonight." And she didn't know I used cocaine. And I said, "Oh no, I'll have two." So we went out to dinner and had a nice dinner and everything, and then we went bar hopping. And I had two. I had two of damn near everything that was in that liquor bag. I swear to God. I woke up the next morning feeling like shit. You know, she's telling me she's leaving me. And you know, it actually registered to me that, you know, I got a drinking problem. So I said, "Yeah, I'll quit." And I didn't go to any meetings or anything. And then I'm kind of thinking about the cocaine. I go, "Well, again, who's an addict? You know, I only really use cocaine when I drink. So cocaine really wasn't my problem at all. So I'll be cool as long as I don't drink." And I was able to quit drinking. But as I quit drinking, you know, my use of cocaine just started increasing. And then it finally got to the point, I was at work, and she was at my house getting ready. She was a flight attendant, she was getting ready to go to work, and she was looking for a pen for some reason. And she rolled back my roll-top desk, and guess what? There's my stash. She calls me up and said, "You know, I'm gone unless you go into treatment." I go, "If that'll shut her up, yeah, sure, you know." So I did the outpatient at Milwaukee Psych. You know, okay, part of that, I had to go to the Monday night meeting. First things first, I don't think we called it that then. But anyway, you know, I go to this meeting and I hear all these people telling all this shit, you know? Jesus Christ, you know. What a bunch of losers. And you know, like the big book says, I look for all the differences between them and me and didn't look at the similarities between us. You know? So, just to make it look good, I'd still go to that meeting every Monday. And, you know, didn't want to be there, didn't talk, didn't participate. And just heard these people telling all their crap. And one of the guys who is a very, very good friend of mine to this day, we were talking after the meeting, and he's talking, you know, he said, "You think you're an addict?" I'm going, I don't really think so. He said, "What are you wasting your frickin' time here for? Get out of here." And I went home. I started thinking, what an asshole. Then I went and snorted some cocaine. And I started thinking, you know, the guy is right. You know, he's totally right, because I continued to use, even though I was going to meetings and was doing outpatient. You know, I thought I was cool, I was sneaking it and so forth. And the more I thought about life, how desperate I was, you know, I finally got down on my knees and prayed for the first time in many years. I said, you know, God help me. I'm hopeless, I'm helpless, and I'm going nowhere, you know. I have to choose between life and death, in my opinion. You know, I didn't see it any other way. And I thought about that for a long time. I mean, not a long time, a couple days. And we had, my wife and my fiance and I had started going to this church. And I really liked the pastor. He's a pretty cool guy, and I could relate to him. And I don't know why. Yeah, I know why. Just during the service, I just something comes over me. And I said, I have to talk to him after the service. So we went into his office and had a private talk. And I told him everything about me. You know, I told him the stuff I'd done, you know, being an addict and alcoholic and the lies and all the rest of the stuff. And he looked at me and he said, you know, God will forgive you. And don't you think it's about time you forgive yourself? I went home and thought about that. And you know, for the first time I felt some kind of hope in my life. He said I could be forgiven. You know, I was in no mood to forgive myself. You know, but if, you know, I'll let God forgive me. To me, you know, because it was sports and academics, self-will went a long way. You know, I was smaller than most people, but with hard work, you know, I performed well. So I'm thinking, you know, this drug business and alcoholism, it's just because I've been weak. My will was weak. And that's what I was convinced. And I go back to this meeting, Monday night meeting, and I'm thinking, still thinking about these things. And I'm observing these people, and these addicts and alcoholics, they're laughing, they're smiling, they're hugging each other, and I'm freaking miserable. So, who's the smart guy here, you know? It finally started dawning on me that you know, I'm lost. I am an addict, I am an alcoholic, and I gotta do something about it, and I can't do it. God knows, if I could have done it myself, I would have done it. And you know, I just decided, right then and there, that I'm gonna surrender, you know? if people are telling me, you know, I was questioning what happened, smiling, and it, you know, they just, they told me, they said, you know what, if you want what we've got, then do what we did. So, well, what do? You know. Of course, you know, it started with doing the 12 steps. And up to that point, my idea of doing the 12 steps was being able to recite the words on the wall on the 12 steps. And once I did that, I'm done. I'm done working the steps. I said, it doesn't work quite that way. You know, there's a lot more to them. That's just a summary of the steps. You got to get into them. So, okay, so I get a sponsor. And then, you know, right away, my sponsor said, oh, by the way, you know, the ashtrays that from the meetings, you got to clean those up after the meetings. I don't think so. He goes, no, I think so. So, you know, they stunk. You know, but if I clean these damn ashtrays, I'm thinking, you know, I feel pretty good about this. I'm doing something for somebody else for a change. I'm not taking anymore. Then it's making coffee. And then my sponsor said, well, why don't you do a lead on the third step, or whatever it was. And I said, well, I'm not really there yet. He said, oh, you will be my next Monday. And so, he's right. I studied the third step, and the next Monday I did the lead on the third step. And I'm going through all this stuff, and I feel better. But more importantly, I'm staying clean and sober. I'm going, damn, it's working. You know, I'm staying with it. Well, we do the fourth step, and I was kind of a half measures guy. You know, I kind of wanted to work the program that I wanted to work, not the one that they were telling me about. So I did a real half-ass fourth step. And then came time for my fifth step, and there's a priest at Milwaukee Psych, and you know, we had an appointment to do the fifth step. And I went there with every intention in the world of holding back certain things in my life I didn't want to tell him about. I just said, yeah, he doesn't need to know this stuff. You know, I know what I did. So we do it, and he's good. We get through. I get through my whole deal, and he goes, okay, what's the rest of it? I said, well, there is no rest. He said, oh yeah, there is. I said, I can tell by looking at you, there's more. And there was more. And I told him. And we had a great session. And I just remember walking, it was a Saturday morning, I remember walking out of that building. And I had, a block and a half to my car. And I felt like my feet never touched the ground. I felt so good that I was finally being perfectly honest. You know, I finally admitted everything that I've done in the past. And just, life was beautiful. You know, I just had this great feeling. You know, the feeling that no cocaine or no alcohol ever gave me. And right then, you know, I knew I had a spiritual awakening, and I knew that this program was really for me. So I just, you know, I put my heart and soul into working the rest of those steps the first time. And you know, as time went on, one day I'm just sitting there talking to my wife, and she, you know, I haven't had an urge to use in 2 days. I can't believe this. I used to have dreams and all this stuff. You know, and just like the promises said, you know, that's been lifted from me. You know, I don't need to use anymore. So, you know, now, you know, I want to continue to work those steps and continue to do what I need to do. And, you know, by that time, I developed, you know, I was reading the big book every day, reading the 12 and 12. I was doing daily prayer and meditation twice a day. prayer twice a day, meditation at night. And I said, you know, I'm going to kind of double my efforts on this because the great feeling I had for the spiritual development. And as I'm doing the 11th step, I'm starting to look at these things and say, okay, you know, the obsession has been lifted from me, but I still have anger. I still have hatred. You know, I still am selfish. I still have an ego problem. Yeah. The way I learned to do the 11th step, you put the negative things about you on one side, and you have the opposite on the other side. I said, I gotta learn to go from these negatives over to the other side. Love, faith, selflessness, so forth and so on. And you know, so now with the obsession lifted, I really, my job now was to work on my spiritual growth. You know, and I read a book that was defining spiritual growth. Just substitute the word psychological for spiritual. You know, you just have to think differently. You know, don't think like an addict anymore. And that really, that made so much sense to me. You know, and at the same time, you know, I'm doing daily Bible readings and so forth. And I'm always struck by, I hope I don't offend anybody, but Jesus always said, you know, to be the ultimate in humility is to love one another and do things for other people. Give up yourself. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't doing enough of that. So, you know, I decided that, you know, I have got to work on these kinds of things, and that 11th step really helped me accomplish that. And I would pray for that every day. And so, then I get to the 12th step, and my sponsor says, well, now that means you got to sponsor somebody. Oh, I don't think, I don't know how to do that. He says, you know, of course you don't. But just remember what you learned in the program and hopefully what I taught you. So I started sponsoring. And, you know, that is just a great reward. You know, we read the traditions earlier, and the fifth one says, every group has but one primary purpose, and it is to carry the message. You know, and if nobody was carrying the message when I came in, I'd be dead. You know, so therefore, I got to be there for somebody else. And my home group is still the Monday night group, and you know, it's at a treatment facility, and we get a lot of newcomers. And you know, to see those people walk in that room for the first time or the second time, that empty look on their faces, sadness, hopelessness, helplessness, you know, it kind of breaks your heart, but it takes you back. And so just remember what it was like, you know, go give them a hug and help them and give them your name and phone number and tell them to call you and all that stuff. And I do that. And, you know, some hang around, you know, unfortunately some don't. More hang around than not, I guess, right now. But you just can see from week to week those people, you know, from that look, empty look in their faces, a little bounce in their step, a little smile on their face, you know, they're starting to dress a little better, you know, they smile, they laugh, and, you know, there's nothing to me more rewarding in recovery than to see somebody get it, you know, say, somebody wants what we've got, you know, and I'm sorry, I'm getting very emotional when I talk about that, because, you know, that is the essence of this program, and this is, it's what keeps me going. Frequently newcomers talk to me and say, you know, you've been clean and sober a long time. I say, why, why do you continue to do all this stuff? You know, I don't get it. And I said, well, tell you what, I've been clean and sober all this time because I kept doing all that stuff all the time. Every 24 hours. You know, I read, I pray, I study, I help others. And I said, why in the hell would I want to stop now? You know, I want to be clean and sober one more day. I don't care how long you got. I truly believe that we have a 24-hour reprieve. You know, it is one day at a time. And if you start looking past it, you know, you're going to forget the hard stuff. You're going to forget the work that needs to be done. And you know, so to this day, this is my group. And, you know, I just love going to that meeting. And now, you know, I do other stuff. I do like big book studies, and we're doing some studies on the ripple effect, which is a 10th step, which is a lot of fun. So I, you know, somewhere in this program I heard this, that more will be revealed. And that's the way I see it. You know, I'm going through this incredible growth spiritually. Things that used to make me very happy, like material things, cars, clothes. I've come to the conclusion that, you know, cars break down, clothes wear out, you know, it goes away. The stuff, the spiritual stuff, that's forever. You know, and there's no one can take the spirituality away from you. It is yours forever. And that's what makes me happy today, the spiritual thing. You know, when I was using, I mean, it got to the point where nobody trusted me, nor should they have trusted me. You know, now I'm very active in my church. I usher, I'm an assisting minister, of all people, and a president of the church council. And I just, time to time, I just reflect back, you know, what God has done for me. And just, you know, I just mind-boggling. Me, who, I didn't deserve any of this, to be honest with you. But you know, I saw the light of the Spirit, you know. And thank God for this program. It has saved my life. And, you know, I hope and pray that I'm able to do the same for somebody else. And you know, to my dying days, I will continue to do this. I get a AA readings every day. And today it was pretty interesting. The prayer for the day is, I pray that I may develop the divine spark within me. I pray that by so doing, I may fulfill the promise of a more abundant life. You know, Bill W. calls the 12-step program a design for living. And that's exactly the way I see it. I had no idea how to live. You know, the 12 steps have taught me how to live. And the promises, most people that know me know that the promises are near and dear to my heart. Because when I was struggling, I would go to meetings reluctantly, but they would read the promises. And they said, you know, if you do this, painstaking about the stage of our development, you know, these things are going to happen to you. And it never really, you know, didn't mean much to me. But the longer I went on, the worse I got, the lower I got. I kept hearing these promises. Then, you know, working the steps, then the obsession was lifted from me. And I started feeling different. And I'm here to tell you today that you work this program like your life depended on it, because it does. Read those promises. If you're struggling, read those promises. I read them every single day, because they're going to come true for you if you'll do the work. I really appreciate you very much inviting me and being patient with me. And I wish each and every one of you another 24 hours clean and sober. And I love you all. Thank you.